Welcome to the SI Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. And before we get to this week's show, I just want to thank all the Yankee fans out there who gave me tremendous feedback on last week's episode with the voice of the Yankees, radio play-by-play man, John Sterling. If you're a Yankee fan out there or someone who's a play-by-play person or into the art of broadcasting, give it a listen. If you're not a Yankee fan, I think you'll enjoy it because he's such a character. So it's in the archives. Check it out on the SI Media Podcast. The response was overwhelming. I really appreciated the kind words. And I wanted to thank everyone for that. For this week's show, ESPN business reporter and a man who is all over Twitter and has been for a long time, Darren Rovell, comes on, and we cover a lot of stuff. His job at ESPN. We get into some business stories from the NBA Finals to gambling and sports to WWE, Vince McMahon. And then, of course, we spend a lot of time on Twitter, why Darren blocks people, how he does his tweets. Does he have someone helping him? Does he have regrets? A lot of stuff. And Darren answered everything. I give him a lot of credit. There was no pulling of the punches. He was very honest. And I thought it was a good interview, so hopefully you enjoy it. Let me know on Twitter, at Jimmy Traina, what you think. And let's get it going. Here is Darren Rovell. All right, joining me now, ESPN business reporter and Twitter. What's the word? I don't even know what to call it. Twitter something. We'll figure it out.
Don't ask me what the word is. I'll get in trouble for coming up with my own title. So don't ask me.
Let's say a Twitter, we'll just say a Twitter staple, Darren Rovell. Darren,
there you go.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Good.
Thanks for coming on. And before we get to Twitter, which obviously we have to discuss, I want to ask you some stuff about your role at ESPN, but I guess it worked out perfectly. I would have a Twitter aficionado on the day after this Brian Colangelo story breaks. Give me your initial thought when you read the Ringer story, and you know, I think there's like a bigger thing here about Twitter makes certain people just lose their minds. But what was your first thought about the story?
In a world where there has been more stories that have been unbelievable in the past year than ever before, seemingly, this was somehow an unbelievable story. I mean, as you kept reading, it was very well done. You know, and I always try to put myself in the shoes of the reporter who gets the tip. You know, obviously the tip was given by someone who, you know, really wanted to out Colangelo here. And when I'm trying to figure out, the first thing I think of is, okay, so the Sixers can't allow Colangelo to really get out in front and make a statement. They have to protect themselves. So I was surprised that Colangelo was supposedly calling Joel Embiid and calling other people before they announced their investigation, which happened this morning. I mean, the speed that these things work at, it's hard to say it's the fault of anyone, but that was my first thought.
Yeah.
And then my second thought went to, okay, if all the accounts are not his, maybe some are his son's. That puts the ball in my court. In terms of, first, I think from a human condition standpoint, what happens if my sons, mm-hmm. I mean, they're four, but had a burner account or was doing something that was involved in my business, would I say, all right, I'm 40 years old, I've had a good career, they're 20, say, I'm just going to lay on the sword and make sure that they don't have a bad career or lose a chance at a career because of this. So it made me cycled in this like personal thing about what happens if it's not all Colangelo, because then he's gone.
Right.
But if it were his son, how does he then protect himself? And the whole thing's just, it is crazy. And you're right. You do get into these things where, you know, Twitter does get into your brain, and, you know, sometimes you just want to have fights with people who have seven followers.
It was remarkable from the standpoint of, and I'm not comparing the severity of the three stories, obviously, but you had a day where, and now of course I'm going to forget the guy's name on the Browns, DeMary, he'll buy the jerseys with the retweets. What was his name? Randall.
DeMarius Randall.
Right. Yeah. So you have DeMarius Randall saying he's going to buy jerseys for every single person who retweets his tweet about the Cavs beating the Warriors. You have the Roseanne situation, which I know you're an ABC Disney guy, so I won't go into that with you. I don't want to get you in trouble. And then the Colangelo, like those, it's my final thought when I went to bed last night was there needs to be like a psychological study on what Twitter does to people. It's crazy.
It does do something. I mean, the protections that I got on Twitter in March of 2009, and what I have built in terms of like how I try to prevent myself from going crazy. It's like a bunch of walls that I set up. You know, how can I, like, do I want to tweet this? No, I think I want to sleep tonight. Right. You know, I mean, so I totally think there's definitely a psychological look into what social media, and more so for us sports fans and us journalists, mm-hmm. what Twitter does.
Would you say you have gone crazy a couple of times on Twitter here and there?
Yes.
Okay. We'll get to all that later.
When I say crazy, it's that I'm responding to someone who has like 2 followers and it's not worth my time, but for some reason my brain wants me to win.
Right.
You know, there's something strange.
I actually do think there's a chemical thing that goes on in your brain. I'm actually being dead serious about that.
No, I think there's a chemical thing that goes on with your brain with Twitter. I think there's a chemical thing that goes on with your brain with eBay. There's a bunch of things that I think go on, and it would be an interesting study. Maybe you should lead it, Jimmy.
I am not that intelligent. Okay, so Twitter obviously be a big focus of this conversation, but let me start in a couple of other places, because it is funny. You're a sports business reporter for ESPN, as everyone knows, but I feel like you're mostly known for Twitter. So I'm just curious about your ESPN role a little bit. You cover sports business, obviously, but is it a situation where you write what you want? Do you have editors tell you to write what they want? Do you have to write on certain days? Do you have to write a certain amount of times? Like, what's your overall deal with ESPN minus Twitter?
The best part of the job is I control about 95% of my days.
That's great.
They understand that I cover the business of sports. The directive, which has been the directive since I came back, was to every day try to write a story, if it's there, that will make the front page of ESPN.com. That is relevant enough, whether it's quirky, whether it's there's great news value, whether there's a name and there's a business side to it. And so that pretty much is almost my complete focus for ESPN.com. I wind up writing about 250 stories a year, and 225 of them, or 220 of them maybe, would be in that right rail in the top 7 stories of the day.
You write 225 to 250 stories a year? That's pretty impressive.
I'm writing 7 to 10 a week.
I didn't realize I went to your page. It didn't look like it was that many. Maybe ESPN needs to have a better archive system, but that's a lot, Darren. You should be getting big bucks.
I'm writing, that's pretty much, almost every day I'm writing something. So I do that. And then I have an editor who makes sure that I'm part of the fray of whatever the network deems is important. Coming up, it's, the NBA Finals, LeBron, Cleveland, sports gambling, Delaware, New Jersey, who's going to be first? Am I going to be there? The Belmont, that's the next 10 days. So I'll be in Cleveland, I'll be in Delaware, and I have that kind of set up. And then there's long-term projects, like I have some NFL projects that are set up. And then TV is more of a day of something happens on Outside the Lines or on a quick Sports Center. That's usually not set up.
What are your favorite stories to cover? Do you like the? I know you do a lot with baseball cards. You had a story about Jeter rookie card recently. Ticket sales, gamble. What is if you?
I love memorabilia. I love. I love. Owners making money, owners losing money, players investing in things. I mean, I think in the next couple couple years, my job is going to be significantly affected by players making more money and then investing in things.
Yeah.
With Carmelo investing in a sports bar and a pizza franchise and following whether they fail or succeed. And LeBron has certainly led that. Tickets continue to be among the most read stories, if it's intriguing, because it touches fans and fans get very angry at ticket stories. So ticketing for sure, endorsements. I mean, when I think about, I've been doing this for 17 years, the things that have changed is that fans are really interested in the business side, where maybe 17 years ago I had to ram it down people's throats a little bit more.
Do you really like the endorsement stories, though?
It depends on if it's like something that's dynamic. If it's like a guy signs a deal with Papa John's, I don't really care.
Right.
You know, it's the ones that are it's the ones that really make sense. I love the shoe stories. I love, you know, it has been so intriguing to cover Adidas and their rise, something that I had never ever thought could happen. And it's been intriguing to cover Under Armour's fall.
Yeah.
How far they've fallen.
I only ask it because
every day I love doing this stuff. I love the business of sports. I love Twitter as well.
I only asked about the endorsement thing because, I mean, I get emails every day from PR people and companies about, oh, you know, we just signed, you know, the athlete X to join Gatorade. And we just, we're giving away a Yankee hat.
The standard one is very boring. You're right.
I got a pitch during the tournament. Like, can we send you a Wilson basketball and if you'll tweet about it? And there is like this, I always feel like there's this part of it where like you feel like you're being used and it's seedy. I don't know.
So what you have to tell people, this is something that I've learned over time, is that you have to set up your expectation. Like, I think you've set up an expectation of like, no, I won't do it because you're sending me a basketball. Like, I'll tell people, if you want to send me something, fine. No guarantees. If you send me something that's egregious, I legitimately will send it back. If I'm ever in a position where I can't write something about Nike or Under Armour because they sent me shoes,
right,
I'm an idiot.
Right.
So everyone knows that. You know, if someone's upset, and if you look over time, people on Twitter always say, "Oh, you're such a shill." But if you look over time, If Nike or Adidas or Under Armour or any company does something that I think is a bad move, a bad product, I'll go after them. Or there's a bad commercial, or if there's a commercial that comes out and I don't really like it, I can't tell you how many. Just like you, I get so many ads where I'm like, doesn't strike me as something anyone's interested in.
I actually saw you besmirch my friend The Rock on Twitter about his sneakers because they got sold out.
I wasn't besmirching The Rock. See,
please.
People misunderstood that. I'm glad you brought that up. We're in a situation where 3 weeks ago I said The Rock is basically Under Armour's best property. He's the only one guy related to sports, related to this, that could put a flag on something and not get killed. J.J. Watt, if he put a flag on something, would get absolutely destroyed,
right,
even though he's earned it more than anyone else.
The fascinating thing about J.J. Watt, I just got to interrupt. The fascinating thing about J.J. Watt is the knock on J.J. Watt is that he's nice. It's really one of the most warped things in sports media. Like, J.J. Watt gets knocked for being a nice guy.
I'm close to J.J. probably more than almost any other athlete.
See, that comment right there is going to get you blowback on Twitter, just so you know.
That's fine.
Okay.
But that's fine. I'm just telling you what it is.
Okay.
And I know the Barstool guys are like, you know, like, he really doesn't go out of his way to broadcast things. That's his knock, that he's broadcasting, you know, he's broadcasting things where, you know, like, he's not broadcasting when he's in a hospital. Like, if the Texans are doing that, that's not his fault.
Well, but my thing, too, is I don't know. Listen, I know him a little bit, too. He's been very kind to me over the years doing it. We've done 3 or 4 interviews and saw him at Sportsman and DA. And he's always, and the thing I will say about J.J. Watt is it's not an act. He's not doing it. It's 100% real. He's not then, you know, in DMs where you have a one-on-one being like, oh, this guy's an asshole and I don't like this guy. Like, he is genuinely a nice guy. It's not an act on it. Yeah. All right, get back to The Rock and your besmirching of the great one.
So The Rock is someone who is incredibly marketable. The Under Armour got him at the right time, and they put out this shoe that people are waiting for that actually is one of the nicest shoes they put out. And it's, I don't know the exact number, but it's so limited edition that it's gone in 20 minutes, and the next time you can order it is June 28th. And I understand the idea of buzz. That's how other shoe companies, you know, the Jordan brand for a while, hey, you know, this is sell out, this colorway sell out. That's how you get buzz. But Under Armour's not in a position right now to get buzz. They need to do volume. And I guess what I probably should have done was another tweet saying, The Rock, for his brand, probably needs a sellout, right? Because he's hot, and anything but a sellout is not good for him. And for Under Armour, it's totally different. For Under Armour, they need sales. And so I think some people confused it as this is a knock on The Rock. It was really on Under Armour, why aren't you making more shoes? They're selling out in 20 minutes, and you can't get them for another month and a half.
All right. That's a good explanation. Just don't ever knock The Rock. It's not allowed. It's not allowed. I'm going to ask you a couple of business questions, and then we'll get to all the Twitter stuff. I don't know if you want to handle this one. If you don't want to answer it, that's fine. I got it. Because the NBA Finals are going to be on ABC, which is ESPN, the company you work for. If this is a four-game sweep, maybe it goes five if the Cavs get lucky. How rough is that for ESPN to have such a short series?
Well, it depends, because I've been surprised by the ratings on some of these awful games.
Right.
Right? I mean, the ratings have been up in some cases, you know, you've seen it all, 15 to 20% on games where, like, it's a 20-25 point blowout, which I think is, I can't explain it. I think people would go away, but they're not. That says something about the NBA. So if people are like this, the question is, does doing this the fourth time bring the casual audience? Probably not.
Well, I think LeBron will always bring a casual audience. My question is more about the fact that this is not going to be. Well, I don't know. I think LeBron. Well, my question is more about this is not going to be a 6 or 7 game series, and ESPN's going to get shafted because it's going to be a short.
The made goods are going to be based on how bad the ratings are for 1 through 4.
Right.
And that's really what's going to matter.
Yeah.
And I think people think that it's going to be worse than it is. There's right. This year, if you look at this year, you know, the ratings have been boffo.
Right.
And even in the playoffs where there's been blowouts, they've been surprisingly good.
It has been amazing.
Yeah. And I think LeBron's got to get one somehow.
Right.
LeBron, the Cleveland LeBronaliers have to get at least one.
Maybe people are sticking around because more people are betting and there's in-game betting and there's prop bets, which will lead me right into the gambling thing that's going on. Give me, for you, from a business standpoint, gambling becomes legal. Give me the number one. What is the biggest thing that's going to happen from that in terms of money and sports fans? Is it going to be, we're going to be inundated with ads for gambling companies and you
yes.
know, the, yeah.
It's going to go back to the late 80s with the touts. There's going to be more people in the gambling information business. It's going to be an all-out fight between traditional gambling companies like Caesars and guys who recently got into it, Cantor Gaming, and the Daily Fantasy, the DraftKings and the FanDuel guys. And then guys that have just come up with apps that make it, you know, easier to bet and to try to win that way. It is going to be an all-out war. And remember the, I guess it was 2016 NFL season with how crazy the DraftKings and FanDuel ads were?
Yeah.
We're probably not going to see them on TV, but anything that we see, you know, any article that we have on the internet is going to have a crazy amount of pop-ups to try to woo people. And it's not going to be that quick because, you know, there'll probably be 4 or 5 states that have gambling legalized and then another 3 to 5. So it's going to dribble out. But this is going to be an all-out war, and as sports fans, we're going to notice it.
Well, and in turn, I mean, this can't be anything but good for the leagues, despite their protests, right?
I agree. Yeah. I mean, there's not really the integrity fee is kind of an interesting play since nothing that Vegas has done has hurt the integrity of the league. I mean, I do think if anything is a negative, it's that, you know, I do think the NCAA might have more issues. I do.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Being out there and them being so compromisable.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. The WWE SmackDown is going to Fox. Were you surprised by that? And do you think that's a good move for Fox?
So, you know, very interesting. The way I understood negotiations went down was that, you know, they were pretty much ready to do that second half of the UFC, which ESPN ultimately got.
Right.
And then, you know, the WWE was able to swoop in because NBC kind of didn't match what they needed to match if they wanted to keep SmackDown. And so in one sense, the reason why I think it's a great move for Fox is because it's completely controllable. I mean, you know, when Shane McMahon brought the UFC to Vince McMahon and said we should buy it, and Vince McMahon said, well, I can't really control it. That's true. I mean, if you look at where the UFC is and Conor McGregor, and who hasn't fought in 550 days for the UFC, and Ronda Rousey, who's obviously WWE, it's so hard to establish names and keep them going because of the nature of the UFC. And the WWE, in a way, is just a dream come true because you can control everything.
Yeah.
And in that sense, I think Fox did a great deal. I think the ESPN UFC deal is a risk depending on, you know, what happens going forward and whether those names can be built. To me, that's clear. It's at a good price relative to the marketplace, and it's smart to build ESPN Plus with something that matters. But you could say that the WWE is a more for sure bet because it can be controlled.
I saw a tweet today, and if you don't, again, I know you have you know I don't want you to badmouth your company, so if you don't want to answer, that's fine. I saw a tweet today that said that Fox, when they had the UFC, couldn't sell ads, and that the WWE, more advertisers would rather buy on WWE than UFC, which I found a little bit surprising because I do think there's an audience there for the UFC. Is that true?
I think advertisers want to. I mean, I think what that might have been referring to maybe was the last year. I mean, in the last year, I think it's gotten hard for the UFC because you have Stipe Miocic at the heavyweight level. You have a guy who's pretty much blah, blah at the heavyweight level. And you've had fights that are here, you know, sometimes they're great and sometimes they're not. Interesting from a Twitter standpoint, even fights that are not great, even cards that are not great, are always like trending on a Saturday,
yeah.
You know, and you know there, and you know, right? So you're still shocked. Like sometimes I'm like, that fight didn't matter, but then I look up and it's not. There's not a baseball game trending. There's not a baseball player. There's three fighters in the top six, and it has whatever number the UFC card is. So I don't understand that. I understand that UFC has struggled. Everyone knows that in the past year, but I would say that even when they're seemingly irrelevant, they're relevant enough that people are talking about them enough that they're trending.
Right.
And you know what demo they're trending in.
Right, of course.
I don't think it's that hard to sell.
Since we're on this topic of WWE UFC, if I asked you for the five greatest business people in sports all time, and I included WWE in that, where would you rank Vince? Is he in your top five?
Even. Oh yes,
yes, he'd definitely have to
in my
be
top five.
Yes,
I he's in my top five, and he might be five. And it's because I have to give a deduction for what the XFL was.
But that was such really a minor. But that was such a minor thing. I mean,
I know it. Well, I know it. Well, I know it was.
Yeah.
I know it was. But it speaks to his that when a titan of business is on the top, one what makes them a leader at business is understanding when voices or when they see something that could be a pitfall and they stop. I just think in his legacy, that will be, it's not going to be the first five lines of his obituary,
no.
But it'll be up there. And I think the new XFL might be up there too, unfortunately.
I respectfully disagree with all of that. I don't think it's even a blip really on his.
Okay.
But that's just me.
You're a bigger WWE fan than I am.
I think, yeah, and there's a lot of layers there with the WWE, with building it from WrestleMania 1 with, you know, Hulk Hogan and Mr. T to where it
and
is.
And that's when I was there. And, yeah.
Oh, you were there in person at MSG?
When I was there as a fan. I was pretty much out my freshman year of high school.
Right.
So 92, that's when I was pretty much out.
I think the Vince pulling his pay-per-views and creating the WWE Network for $10 a month. When that happened, I think people, you obviously will remember this because it's what you cover and you follow this stuff, but I think people forget he got absolutely destroyed for that decision. You're giving up, you know, 40,
and the, 50. And the stock got destroyed.
Right.
The market hated it.
And how ahead of his time was he for doing that? Now it's, the network's doing well and everyone's starting their own niche stuff.
Yep.
And it turned out to be.
They said what they would not never say today. Why are you giving? Why are you? How value this archive isn't? You know, you're attributing some of this cost to this archive, and now right. Everyone's building archives,
right?
Because that's what keeps people beyond a live event. So no, I'm there. I just think we probably disagree on
the exit.
And
yeah.
And he is. I mean, my battle with him is when Mr. McMahon died or almost died,
right.
And they were playing that with the explosion in the car.
Right.
Must have been 2009 or 10.
Right.
I went on CNBC when I worked there and said that this was irresponsible, and the number one material risk to their stock is that Vince McMahon is still running it. And even though this is Mr. McMahon, some people can confuse it. And the SEC should really step in and tell them to stop doing it.
That is a ridiculous take, Darren.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
It's fake. He didn't blow up.
Anyway, I know. Anyway, the best part about that was I asked the WWE for a statement.
Oh, God.
And this was clearly Vince giving me the FU.
Right.
It was the best possible thing you could ever imagine. And the statement, which is somewhere online still, said, we are looking into suspects for the murder of Mr. McMahon. As of right now, the primary suspect is CNBC sports business reporter Darren Revelle. And I read that on the air.
And you loved it.
And then I loved it. And then I cracked up like, this is just, he knew the way to say, you know, respect my genius. And he did it perfectly.
And
that was all him. You know, that was all.
Oh,
him.
Of course. And that was also his way of saying that's a bad take. The SEC should look into Mr. McMahon being blown up by a limo on Monday Night Raw. That's a good one, Darren. All right. I want to get to Twitter. We have a lot of Twitter stuff to discuss. Let me just do this real quickly for everyone out there, because this episode of the SI Media Podcast is sponsored by Buffalo Wild Wings. This time of year brings us two things, graduations and Father's Day, and the gifts that go along with them. Before you buy Dad another tie or that grad a balloon that will probably float away, ask yourself this question. Does my dad or grad like wings or sports, or of course, better yet, both? If the answer is yes, then get them a Buffalo Wild Wings gift card right now. If you purchase $30 worth or more in-store or online, Buffalo Wild Wings will give you a $5 bonus to keep for yourself. That is a gift that gives back. How generous of you, Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports, terms and conditions do apply. I feel like I did a spot there for Buffalo Wild Wings. I'll have a business reporter on who covers all this stuff. It just all melds together. All right, Twitter. So much. I can't tell. When I said on Twitter that you were going to be on this podcast, I can't tell you how many people asked me to ask you if you could unblock them. So let's start with this. What is the Darren Revelle blocking policy on this, June 1st, 2018? You there?
I'm here. I just had some hiccups on my phone. Okay. Blocking for me follows several forms. Sometimes I'm doing it to protect myself, and more often than not, just saying, all right, I want to go at this person, but it's really not worth it. And if I block them, I'll just quickly forget and we'll move on. So that's probably number one. Number two is I remember you if you're like being unnecessarily mean. I have a very, very thick skin, so that's not like, you're calling me names, you're calling me nerd. I have never blocked anyone for calling me a nerd. In fact, I'm honored. but yes, I blocked a person today because when I ranked the spelling bee and had pictures of the three kids who I thought would win, which I've been doing since 2002, he called me Jerry Sandusky. It's not that this was the first time. I know this guy's done about 20 or 30 of these, and I just don't feel like having him in my life anymore.
I think that's funny, but that's just, I guess, my dark sense of humor.
I've probably blocked a couple thousand people.
I have a colleague who wants you to unblock him, but we'll get to that at the end. I'm going to make my case.
I do pardons.
Okay.
I've done a lot of them, and I've only immediately blocked someone for life after a pardon once.
Okay, who was that? What was that about?
It's some girl that just, she thinks it's a badge of honor for me to block, and,
right.
And so she asked for an unblock, and then she immediately was trying to be a jerk.
Okay. Tell me, give me the Darren Rovell setup and home base setup and the scenario when you are game one of the NBA finals, for instance, Thursday night, 8 o'clock or whatever it is, 9 o'clock, games tips off. Where are you? How many screens? How are you monitor? How many tweets do you have loaded up? Give me the breakdown.
I have about 10 loaded up per game. Like I have for game three, I have what the face value is of the courtside seat and how that's changed from the first round of the playoffs to the fourth. I have that. I have some old newspaper clips. I have some other things. I've saved some stuff from Cavs fans and Warriors fans. So I have about 10 tweets a night kind of ready to go. I have a computer, a desktop computer, an iPad, an iPhone, and a laptop, and I'm just kind of watching that like
air
traffic controller and having fun.
Do you have anyone helping you? Do you have a staff? Do you have an assistant? Is there anyone helping you find the tweets, find the photos, find the disc date and history, or is it 100% Darren Rovell?
No. I have people who occasionally send me stuff. There's no one on staff. I've tweeted every single tweet. But I rely on people knowing what I do and kind of being the conduit. You know, I give you credit for something that, you're like a mini sports business reporter. You know what I'm looking for. You know I'm looking for a tattoo or some crazy buzz cut or things like that. And then I have a guy who does my newest feature, the Rovell Daily Times, which is truly awful.
It really is.
It's so awful.
It's so bad.
I'm proud of it.
Now,
I'm so proud.
Do you ever feel like, I mean, what you just described sounds a little insane. I mean, what we do, I mean, listen, even I'll have two screens going, the phone, blah, blah, blah. But do you ever stop and say to yourself, this is too much? This is too much.
I think I'm wired to be, just to have that mentality. I think I was wired for Twitter before it happened, and it just kind of filled the need. Like people said, what do you do before Twitter? Well, my mind was just going in different places. And so I've accepted that this is kind of what I do. I think over time I do fewer tweets by, I probably do half, except for on Super Bowl, I always do like 150 to 180, but I probably do half the amount of tweets, because I try to make them, more impactful. I'd like someone to, when they see a tweet, say, oh, this is interesting, or this is going to be interesting, instead of like, I just hope Revell shuts up. I like him in my feed for some things, but he's just too noisy. So I've calmed it down a little bit. I do have someone, I have to throw this out. I do have someone who monitors Twitter for me basically 24/7.
Really?
And yes. And that person allows me to have a normal life. So essentially, if the person thinks, so that person knows exactly what I'm looking for. So if they think that it is something that is interesting, they'll email me. If they think it's something that's important, they'll text me. And if they think that it's code red, they'll call me. And that system's kind of set up pretty much 7 days a week.
Do you pay this person?
That person is compensated.
Okay. And 24/7 for this person? They're not allowed to sleep?
I mean, for the most part, this person likes doing it. They're formerly in news. They're in another job now, and they kind of love the news.
But are they allowed to sleep, or that you make them stay up 24?
No, they're allowed. Yeah, they're allowed to sleep.
You let them have a meal every now and then.
Yes. Okay. Yes. All but right. It allows me to like be a father of three and be with my wife and right. actually like be a functional human being. But, and if that person wanted to have themselves named, I would name them, right. but. He doesn't like that.
But that person does not send the tweets to you. You were the only person who sends a tweet from the
correct.
At Darren Revell.
Never account. Tweeted, yes.
So yeah. do you think, yeah. I had, are you familiar with World Wide Wob, Rob Perez? I'm sure you
I
are.
Am.
Yeah, so I had him on a few weeks ago, and I asked him if he could go 24 hours without tweeting, and he said, yes, not a problem. I said, could you go 24 hours without checking Twitter? He said, no chance. So now I'm going to ask you that question. Could you go 24 hours without checking Twitter?
I've done it.
Okay. And were you shaking? Did you have like seizures?
It was very difficult.
Right.
I just went on vacation with my family. I was probably on Twitter maybe an hour a day until all hell broke loose the final day of vacation, which was that's when the Supreme Court betting legalization
oh,
went
okay.
down.
So this was recent.
When the Eli Manning memorabilia settlement went down and when David Tepper bought the Panthers, all on that same day, my last day of vacation.
Right.
My wife, thank God, understood that I was not going to see a chaise lounge that day.
Right. So you can shut off from it if you have to.
I can. Yeah. I can.
Okay. What
it's hard at night when I, you know, like it's hard for me to go to sleep. And I think part of it's because all day, you know, it's just buzzing. You can't just lay down and just say, okay, stop.
That might be a sign to get help. Just throwing that out there.
Yes. Yes.
Do you,
or a sign to start a new business, you know,
that's
phone,
true too.
Phone and social media addiction centers. Why not make money off it?
There'll be some of those soon. That's for sure.
Yes.
Do you once did the 100 rules of Twitter. Well, for Twitter. Do you, I'm just curious, if you had to update that today, give me like one or two rules that you didn't have on it then that you would have on it now.
There's some rules that I follow, like usually, although last night was not a good example because the guy who I was going back and forth with has 27 followers. Usually, you know, I try not to create firestorms with people who have less than 200 or 300 followers, because then other people can amplify that and it turns into something that's, so I have there's a renewed awareness about that. But, I hate the tweet that like, you know, like the excitement knee jerk tweet of like, oh yeah. You know, like just the noise.
Wow.
NFL Saturday.
Wow. Is
Sundays.
A big one on Twitter.
Wow.
Wow.
Like, you just keep your hands, you know, off the computer. It doesn't do anything. Now, if you're going to wait, just hopefully wait to say something substantive about that, or don't really say it because it's just clogging up all of our feeds and a million wows.
But how,
I'm not sure.
I say this,
makes it more exciting.
I say this with all due respect, and I appreciate you coming on and letting me have it. How could you, Darren Revell, of all people, complain about someone clogging a timeline or sending out something stupid? I mean, come on. It's like me telling someone to like have a salad instead of a fries, you know, like, come on. You can't do it, Darren.
Yeah. You know, I do have a what people don't realize is, like, I am very self-aware. I know when I'm sending a horrible headline or, like, I know it's horrible.
Right.
I have fun with it. Like, I am that guy who I've always had, since I was a kid, a corny sense of humor. It hasn't left me. And I'm not going to apologize for it, and I'm not going to change it. Don't follow me.
Right. Well, but, like, of course.
I'm not... You're not going to get me to actually delete something because there's seven retweets and 195 replies, you know.
Right.
I've seen every GIF on delete your account. My favorite one is the Wheel of Fortune one.
Yeah, delete your account is, that's getting to me to the stick to sports. I mean, stick to sports is an automatic block for me. And the delete your account, I'm getting there too. It's tired and
played
out.
Delete your account. I usually do them a favor and delete my account in their eyes, which is to block them.
Right. Throwing that block down. Give me, what are some of your biggest Twitter regrets? We all have them.
Listen, I think there's been, out of my 140,000 tweets, there's been 20 truly horrible tweets, and they're all based on me just not 100% paying attention and not, you know, not understanding, especially in the early going, you know, the gravity of the megaphone. The one that destroys me is the overweight guy sitting in two chairs at the Bulls game.
Right.
And the first thing that comes to my mind is, like, cost of two seats. And, you know, and I put that down there. And when I look back, and I feel like I've learned from the things that have gone wrong, and I hope other people do too.
Right.
But when I look back, it's like, you know, I'm rocking my twins back and forth who are both crying, and I'm not paying attention. I'm not 100% focused. And
right.
I think, especially having 2 million followers and Twitter being as active as it is, it's really struck home over the last maybe 3 or 4 years that at every point you really have to be paying attention. You have to almost act like you're on television mm-hmm. when you're sitting on your couch, because the magnitude of the responsibility and how, yes, it's great. And when things are great and you're pumping your fists and, wow, this is awesome, this is good, I thought of something, I have an adrenaline high. The lows are there too if you're dumb.
Right.
And so I've kind of been, I think I've learned from it. And I think it's made me better as a tweeter.
You probably don't remember this. We've gotten into one Twitter skirmish, and it was a very, very, very long time ago. Because I refuse.
What was it over? I remember.
I will tell you. First of all, let me just say this. I refuse to fight with people on Twitter. Like, I'm not doing it. I just refuse to do it. But this was a long time ago. You had tweeted, I guess, from a Super Bowl Playboy party, and you were not happy with the selection of the playmates.
Oh, yes.
And I think I snapped back at you on that one, and we got into a little. The thing about that is, what I hate about that is, too, is, like, we know each other a little bit, so I will snap back, and you'll respond, and then right away, everyone has to chime in that, like, it's a Twitter fight, and it's like, well, not really. It's just, like, I'm telling them this. And
well, it's a Twitter fight automatically when it's involving me. Right. Like, it's a fight when it's involving
me. Well, you and the former host of this.
People want to make it that way.
You right. and the former host of this podcast, the great Richard Deitch, sort of made that a thing.
Yes. We had, and then I unfollowed him, and the, you know,
when I did the research,
let's talk about that. Let's talk about that situation.
Sure.
So that's one of those situations where a Playboy party, and for years that needs context. I wish I never tweeted that, but it needs context.
Okay.
So the context is that I proudly had for years had been kind of like the guy who was analyzing the Super Bowl parties. It became from 2000 to 2006 or 7, which is the heyday. It will never touch what it was. It was reckless spending by the skin mags without any ROI, and people loved it. And the guest lists were just crazy, and the outfits and everything and the seams and the amount of, and I love that I've covered that, that I kind of made that a little niche within the business of how good are these Super Bowl parties and I'm here for you.
Right.
And so that's the whole context of it. Now, so in this year, in it must have been 07, I think, so this is, 11 years ago, in this year, the Playboy, which had been struggling and had just decided or was about to decide that they were no longer going to do a print publication, you know, had older women there instead of the younger women. So it was part of the evaluation that was actually in the article that this is. But Twitter, by its nature, is out of context. And I sent a tweet from that piece in the story that just said, like, you know, you could tell that Playboy is losing it, whatever it is, because the age of the women or the quality of the women weren't what they were. Out of context, in that little bite, not a good tweet. In the article and understanding what I do, better, but maybe you don't even say that,
right,
you know?
Right.
So,
all right.
So, but that's kind of the context of it.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things you also learn. Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
Twitter, by its very nature, is out of context. You cannot possibly, even in 280, explain what you need to explain in some tweets that have a the complexity that they do.
Well, that's
and
why
that's one of those things that I've also learned. Like, I can't even start, because even if I now create the newly opportune thread, people are going to look at the first one. You
right.
cannot create context on things that are complex.
Right. And that's why I refuse to fight with people on Twitter, because, well, one, no one's ever going to change their mind and say, oh, you're right. And then
no one's going to win, and
right.
you're never going to get a point across to someone.
And then when you keep, the more you keep going, the more the context gets lost. So, I mean, I wrote a thing. So my column today, Train of Thoughts, just as a very quick example, I wrote a thing about Ben Simmons dating Kendall Jenner. And I said, this is bad news for the Sixers fans because of the Kardashian curse. So someone on Twitter said I was a caveman and sexist and I'm blaming a woman for a man's troubles, not realizing that it's about the Kardashian curse. And there are these horrible people who date all these athletes. And then it's always a debacle. Now, I could explain that on Twitter, but I'm going to have to go into like 5,000 characters and go, and
correct.
That person's not going to want to see my site. So I let it go. You know, people
are not going to want to click on your column either. That's the other problem.
Right.
You could then offer context, and they don't want to see the
right.
context in that way.
So
they just want to argue.
So fighting with people is useless.
Yeah.
The Marvin Jones thing. Do we regret that at all?
Nope. Not a second. Nope. So here's the thing where I tried to create context, okay? So Marvin Jones says he and his wife are opening a Nothing Bundt Cakes. A little context is that I anchored this hour French show on franchises when I was at CNBC. It's one of the most proud things that I did. It was a piece of investigative journalism that, you know, probably one of my top five, if you consider that whole piece, and reading franchise disclosure documents and franchises. It's hard to make franchises. It's hard to, it has a reputation of business in a box, and it's much harder. And so I wanted to comment on franchises in general. And the only way I was going to do it out of nowhere was to say, here, let's look at this situation. Do you open up your own bakery, or do you do a franchise where they take 9% of your gross? And that's all I was saying, and was hoping that it created a conversation from that. And Marvin Jones didn't want to have it, and he could say whatever he wants. And
he
took it as an insult to he and his business, because he was just announcing this happy moment, and everyone or many people interpreted that I was just crapping on their parade.
Right.
That was not my intention.
All right, but here's,
I was not trying to troll. I was thinking about it in my way of this is the debate that people, not only athletes, but people across America have. Do they open up their own business, or do they pay to open up a business that has a higher name recognition?
See, I get it that that's your thing, but my response to that would be, do you really have to respond to Marvin Jones opening up a bakery? Like, it's Marvin Jones, it's not LeBron James. Let the guy open his bakery and leave him alone.
But I wanted to, I love the conversation around franchises.
Right.
I think that athletes, do I really have to comment on athletes' businesses? I like athletes' decisions and what they do. And sometimes, in some cases, it's been good and sometimes it's been bad. But I felt I had the right to do that. I knew in my heart what I was talking about. He didn't want to engage me in the conversation, and that's fine. I mean, it's amazing how something like that becomes the number one Twitter moment, out of nowhere. But I think it's an interesting conversation to have. And sometimes
it's not.
Not having those conversations is why athletes wind up in, and I'm not saying this is a bad one, bad franchise deals. Because in the locker room, in the clubhouse, a franchise is something that's cool. But what happens is your experience as a customer is a completely different from being on the other side of the counter.
Nobody cares about Marvin Jones opening a franchise of some bakery. That's all I'm saying. Except for you.
I wish him all the luck in the world.
Yes.
No ill feelings.
All right. Now, before we wrap up, I mean, where do you see Twitter going now? There's always a lot of thing about the stock and is it making money and they do this wrong and they do this right and they're signing deals to show games and this and that. Where in 3 years from now, where is Twitter? Are we still using Twitter? Is something coming along? Is it just for media people?
I hope so. I have a lot vested in it, Jimmy, I think that over the years it's gotten better to use. I feel like its value has increased. Uber's not making money either, and they're worth $50 billion.
Right.
And I do think the narrative has changed a little bit in that, when you're compared to the other social media like Facebook and Instagram, where it's all based on monthly active users.
Right.
Now they're really spinning it to what they should be, which is a news service. I think they're doing a good job. I do like the idea of shows on there and live broadcasts if they matter. Okay. I don't want, if it just becomes a whole cluster of things that can't get on TV, so we're just going to take it to make a point. Twitter's not doing anything, and they've done a couple of those deals. I'm sorry, I don't want to see Mountain West football.
Yeah, right? I mean, I think it's just because of my age and I'm old, but I don't want to watch anything on Twitter. But that's just me.
Okay, I'm good. I like it. I like how the screen moves. I'm fine. I look at many screens.
Yeah.
To me, it's fine. I like the idea of them getting into the game of having unique shows on Twitter, just like Netflix has something. I mean, I think they can be in the content business, though I never expect them to be their own news organization.
Yeah.
I never expect it, just like, Google. But I think they've done a pretty good job over the last year evolving and pitching who they are. And I will say that there's still a negative sentiment hovering around Twitter that doesn't exist with Instagram, for sure.
Right.
When you're in Instagram, it seems like everyone's cheering for each other.
Everyone is nice on Instagram.
And everyone's having a good time.
That's so funny.
In Twitter, it's like there are things like I never post my family on Twitter because people are going to kill it.
Right.
But people love my family on Instagram.
Yep. I've always said Instagram. Everyone on Instagram is nice.
Positive energy. Yeah. I mean, there is truth to the fact that even though I love Twitter, there is truth to the fact that the energy is not a net positive. And on Instagram, especially, I think Facebook's got, and obviously they're owned by the same, but they're owned by Facebook, but Instagram has been much more positive as the number one because Facebook has the politics all wrapped up into it.
Right.
But Instagram, just, you have a good feeling about Instagram that people are rooting for each other. That's where, if you're on a diet, you put your diet thing. You'd never put your diet thing on Twitter.
No.
You'd get killed.
It depends. Some people do that. All right, I got to wrap. I appreciate all the time. I've enjoyed this thoroughly. Last thing, I got to make a case for a colleague to get on block. So my colleague, Jack Dickey, he's a great writer at sportsillustrated.com. Good guy. This is his side of it. So I'll present it and then you can make your decision. You can be like Judge Judy. So during one of the, 2016 debates, when Trump was being his psychotic self, you tweeted something like, you know, I don't know if this is good for the country, but it's great content.
That is my evergreen tweet that every day gets retweeted.
Okay, so then when
I feel sorry for our country, but this is great content.
Right. So like then on election night, when it became apparent that the deranged sociopath was going to win,
right,
Jack retweeted your tweet from the debate, and then you blocked him. I think that's an unfair block, Darren, I have to say.
I think I was probably oversensitive, and I think it's an unfair block.
And he was just on Jeopardy, and he won a lot of money on Jeopardy. He would be someone you would like to follow. Funny guy, very smart, good writer. At Jack Dickey, unblock him.
Okay, I will unblock him now.
I appreciate that. All right, thank you for coming on. This was fun, and good luck dealing with the Twitter mob out there.
I really enjoyed it, Jimmy. Thank you.
All right, take care. All right, my thanks to ESPN's Darren Rovell. Fun chat. Listen, however you feel about Darren, I know there's a lot of people out there that get on him. You have to, I guess, respect the passion. And he had answers for everything, and the conviction is there. So I give him credit for that, and I give him credit for coming on and answering the stuff. And hopefully you guys enjoyed the conversation. And that wraps up this week's edition of the SI Media Podcast with Jimmy Trana, and I'll see you next week.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.